Grab your parka and some warm boots because we're exploring Alaska as a cold weather destination. Much of Alaska really shines during the summer, but in some areas of Alaska, winter is actually considered high season, where you can try your hand at dog mushing, marvel at massive ice sculptures, chase the northern lights, and experience the Alaskan wilderness dressed up in its winter finery. To welcome us to Anchorage in the winter, we're joined by Lisa Maloney. She's a travel writer and the author of The Moon Guide to Alaska. And she's lived in Anchorage for more than 30 years now. Lisa, thanks for being here.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Lisa, you live in Anchorage, and I would imagine that's probably the most convenient gateway for anybody flying from the lower 48 to see Alaska, isn't it?
It is a huge convenient gateway. We have probably the most flights coming up from Seattle and other parts of the lower 48. You can even get a non-stop here sometimes from some communities.
So let's say we fly into Anchorage and we have a winter break and we want to think of what Anchorage and that part of Alaska might offer. First of all, winter or summer, talk about the centrality of Anchorage and how it can be seen as both a gateway and a springboard for that region.
Sure. So the road system in Alaska does not cover the entire state, but it is very well connected here around Anchorage. So if you are looking for a driving holiday, Anchorage is the best place to start it. You can go south, or you can go north, or you can kind of go north and east. So you have lots of options here.
From a practical point of view, it's kind of like the only driving place to go, I would imagine.
Just about, yeah. You can get to a few other places from here, but this is the best place to start your driving trip. And Anchorage is also nice because we're so centrally located. You can take day trips from Anchorage and get out to the sea or deeper into land. You can see almost any type of terrain that you want to see from here. So we've got lots of options to offer.
What about skiing? I don't hear much about skiing in Alaska. If you're a ski enthusiast in Anchorage, what do you do? Is it cross country, downhill? Is there a big resort?
So there's not a huge resort right in Anchorage, but there is one in the small town of Girdwood, which is about 35, 45 minutes south of here by road. Technically, it's actually still considered part of the municipality. And it's, again, a great day trip from Anchorage. There is a resort there with lots of downhill ski grooming. But if you like cross-country skiing, let me tell you about Kincaid Park here in Anchorage. It is truly world-class. And as a cross-country ski enthusiast, if I didn't live here, I would visit here just to cross-country ski there.
You know, I know that Anchorage is well-known for its trails in the summer, and it just makes sense that it'd be also really good for cross-country skiing in the winter.
Absolutely. And if you'd rather be off-groomed trail, then we have lots of space for backcountry skiing here as well, just right outside of town.
I'm holding a book right now, which is the Lisa Maloney Guidebook to Day Hiking in South Central Alaska, and that is basically the Anchorage area. So you've written a whole book on those hikes.
Very much so. But if I may just insert one quick note that we are surrounded by beautiful mountains, which are a spectacular destination in any season. But in winter, there are things called avalanches. And so if you're going to recreate in steep, hilly terrain around here, it's a really good idea to have at least the basic idea of avalanche hazard so you can recognize if a situation is dangerous and decide if you want to take yourself somewhere a little safer.
If you got a family and you just want some fun in the snow, basically, I was reading in your book about something called fat biking. What is that?
Oh, fat biking. So the fat part of the bike is the tire. These are bikes with a specially built frame so that they can accommodate tires that are several inches wide. And those let you more or less float on top of the snow. So you're not going to be biking in deep powder, but if there's any kind of a packed terrain or packed down trail, you can bike right on top of it just like you would bike on a sidewalk. Ooh, and it is a fantastic way.
Fun. And is it realistic for somebody to actually have an experience of dog sledding?
Yes, absolutely. Now, if you come up right before the Iditarod, then you might find that a lot of the musher's kennels are actually busy getting ready for that.
Oh, but that's how they make a little extra money when they're not racing, is they take tourists out on their dogs.
Oh, yeah, lots and lots of places do.
I never thought about that, because it's expensive to keep a team of dogs all year long for your race.
Those dogs eat a lot of food.
Okay, let's talk about the Iditarod. That's the big deal every March, right? It starts in Anchorage. It finishes, what, 800 miles to the north in Nome, 1,000 miles away or something like that?
They will have covered a little more than 1,000 miles, yes. There are two different routes that they might take, a southern route and a northern route, but they all basically cover a good 1,000 miles of terrain.
It's a big, big festive thing in Anchorage as they kick it off. And I understand they have a ceremonial start, which is the big party. And then a couple days later, they have the serious start, right?
That's the start in Anchorage, is the ceremonial start, which is always on a Saturday. It really is a big party. You have street vendors. You have people selling food.
There are now over 700 dogs that have passed
the locals, we like to go out and set up a lawn chair and watch the dogs go by. And, you know, the mushers throw candy out to the crowd, or sometimes they'll throw dog booties to the crowd.
Dog booties. You know, my sister ran the Iditarod, Jan Steves, and she actually finished it. I think she was the one of the oldest women to ever run the Iditarod successfully. And she was so into it. In fact, she spends much of the year up there now with that Iditarod culture. There's a whole culture of dog mushers, isn't there?
Well, I believe a lot of mushers would tell you that it's a lifestyle.
It's a beautiful community, and I don't understand it, but it has sure grabbed my sister by the heart.
It is all-consuming, but I mean that in the best way possible, just because you have to dedicate your life to the dogs just the way that they are dedicating
their lives
to
you. Like dog booties, you just go, well, of course we have dog booties.
Of course they do, definitely. Or sometimes they'll fall off the dogs, too, while the dogs are running down the trail. And then the little kids, especially, that are watching by the sidelines when there's a little gap to run out.
What a cool souvenir. Well, that's a big deal. So if you're there on the first Saturday in March, you see the ceremonial beginning, and that also kicks off a local festival. You write about it in your book, Fur Rondi.
Oh, so Fur Rondi actually usually happens just before the Iditarod. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of very Alaskan things. My favorite thing to do when people are visiting, or maybe they've just lived up here for a little while and they haven't quite copped onto it, is to tell people to go to the outhouse races in Fur Rondi.
Outhouse races.
It's just what it sounds like. They take an outhouse, you know, a little shed that you would poop in, and they put it on skis, and they attach a team of people. I believe it's somewhere between 4 and 6 people to this, and then you have head-to-head races. So there will be 2 outhouses on the track at once.
That's my kind of race.
It's a hoot, and they decorate them to go with themes. And of course, there has to be somebody sitting in the outhouse because that's what it's for.
I gotta say, that sounds so Alaskan to me, just sort of like off the wall and hardcore nature and humorous.
It is hilarious. One of the winning teams recently was called the Runny Diapers. It was a bunch of dads, I think, that got together and they wore giant diapers on the outsides of their costumes while they ran, but were fast. Yeah.
If you were going to be there for the cultural aspect, you've got this crazy Fur Rondi time before the Iditarod. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with travel writer Lisa Maloney, and she writes The Moon Guidebook to Alaska. She also writes Day Hiking in South Central Alaska and 50 Hikes Around Anchorage. You can find out more about Lisa's work at her website, hikingalaska.net. So on that great day, the first Saturday in March, Anchorage must just be in all its splendor. That must be the most energy-filled day of the year for that city.
It is. It is a real party. Everyone is excited. I've never seen a grumpy person at the ceremonial start of the Iditarod. And then if you have so much fun there that you want to keep it going for another day, the actual official start of the race usually happens in Willow, which is a couple hours north of Anchorage. Mm-hmm. So you can easily make a day trip up there. It's just like tailgating at a football game. You walk out onto a frozen lake, which is where the race starts, but don't worry, it's nice and frozen, so nobody's falling through. And you take your lawn chairs and you take your cooler, which keeps the beer warm enough to drink instead of cold enough to drink. And you take your blankets and you wrap up and you just hoot and holler as the mushers are released at timed intervals and they get started on the actual 1,000-mile race north.
Oh, that's great. Now, if I was going to Anchorage in the summer, I'd certainly use it as a springboard to see Denali National Park. It's 4 hours beyond Anchorage. But I understand in the winter, Denali is wide open for visitors as well.
So it is absolutely still open. And the rangers love it when people come visit during the winter because not a lot of people realize that's such a great opportunity.
Yeah, what could you do in the winter in Denali? Because you're right there in the shadow of the tallest mountain in North America, 20,000 feet high. We're all proud of Mount Rainier in Washington State, where I live, and it's 5,000 feet shorter than Denali.
Well, Mount Rainier is beautiful too, just for the record.
Okay, I'll agree with that. Okay, yeah. But Denali must just be whoa.
It is gloriously beautiful. And actually on the drive north from Anchorage, that is one of the best opportunities to see Denali. There are a couple of viewpoints just off the highway. Now, they might or might not be open depending on the road conditions, but you can keep an eye out for it from the road itself as you're driving north. Once you get to Denali National Park, skiing and snowshoeing are a couple of great ways to spend time there. I believe there are actually more tours available now than there have been in the past.
When I have friends going to Alaska in the winter, usually they send me a photograph of them in a hot springs.
So that's going to be further north from Denali. It's actually up to Fairbanks and then another hour or so down the road, you get to a place called Chena Hot Springs.
That's a long way to go from Anchorage. If you're in Anchorage, can you enjoy the Northern Lights? If you're there in the winter, that's the time, right?
You can, but you're probably going to need a rental car or a local buddy with a vehicle, because the key to seeing the Northern Lights here is getting out of town and away from light pollution, because this many houses, we just generate a certain amount of ambient light. It doesn't mean you can't see the Northern Lights from in town, but it's harder.
If you want to see them, you want to see them in their full glory, and that's a function of how dark it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then from Anchorage, the Northern Lights can be straight overhead, but you can also look to the north. They're either going to be on the north horizon usually, or the northeast, or straight up overhead, depending on how strong they are.
You know, this is just so exciting to think that you're just a few hours from Anchorage and you can go there for a 4-day weekend and there's lots to do. When you're thinking about Anchorage in the winter, what are the pros and cons of the different months?
You know, the weather is not always predictable, so it can vary from year to year. But in general, the very early winter, there might not actually be that snow. It kind of varies in when it gets started. Yeah, so you might.
Your book said it usually comes in late December, actually.
Nowadays, that seems to be more common. So if you're really lucky, if you're big into ice skating, you can get something called Nordic skates. They're extra long ice skating blades that clip into the bottom of ski boots. And if it's been cold enough, but we haven't had a lot of snow, you can actually go skating out on some of the marshes and the lakes if they've frozen over enough.
What about safety, just for people walking around? I've been in cities when there's been an ice storm and it is just treacherous to go outside. How does Anchorage deal with that, with its visitors that are from the lower 48 and don't get it?
That's a really good point. Slipping and falling is a fairly big hazard up here during the winter. And unfortunately, I don't think there's any kind of a program where we hand out ice grippers to visitors. I really wish we did.
There is something called ice grippers, huh?
Yeah, so, or some people might call them ice cleats, or sometimes you might hear certain brand names thrown around just as sort of a general term. But they're all universally, there's some variation of metal pokey things attached to a stretchy harness. And so you sort of stretch the harness over the bottom of your shoe and then
metal pokey things on a stretchy harness.
Of course.
Now you're talking my language.
Go into the store and ask for those. Right.
So you just slip those metal pokey things on and it's a stretchy harness. So one size fits all. And then you can walk around without breaking your shoulder or your arm.
That's the idea, as long as there's a good fit between the pokey things and your shoes. So some of them are one size fits all, but you'll also see some that come in small, medium, large, just because there's so much variation in shoe size.
Now, if I got my pokey things on and I'm hungry and I want something that I'll never forget, is there like street food? Is there merchants out there selling things that are typically Alaskan? What would I put on my list, my eating list?
So a lot of places are known for their street food. In Alaska, I'd say the one very characteristic street food that we have up here is reindeer sausage. And if you are in downtown Anchorage, you will find vendors selling them up and down the street. They are delicious. And people are getting more and more creative about the types of toppings that you put on there. So sautéed onions are a big one. I have it on good authority that the secret is that you sauté them in a soft drink. In a soda.
Them in a soft drink.
Mm-hmm. Like, apparently, that's what makes them so delicious. But you'll also find people offering kimchi, for example, is one of my favorites to go on your reindeer dog. If you have an ethical issue where you don't want to eat Rudolph, then usually the same vendors will offer a few different alternatives. So there can be non-reindeer
options. I want to address this right now, because if somebody has no ethical issue in eating beef or pig, is there a difference about a reindeer compared to a cow? I mean, I think you can have an ethical issue about eating meat, red meat, but there's nothing more precious about a reindeer than a cow.
No, I wouldn't say so. And in fact, you might feel ethically better about eating reindeer dogs because they're not going to be in a factory farming type of situation.
There you go. The reason I ask that, Lisa, is because for years I took my tour groups up to Scandinavia and I just thought it was great. We're going to have reindeer tonight for dinner. And people go, oh, Rudolph. No, come on. It's like just a cow.
Well, but you know what? But if cows drove Santa's sleigh, then I'm sure they would have the same reaction there.
There you go. We can think about that when we go to Anchorage in the winter because we're going to have long nights. Lisa Maloney is joining us from her home in Anchorage, where she tells us about the winter sparkle of Alaska's largest city right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Lisa is the author of The Moon Guidebook to Alaska, as well as Day Hiking South Central Alaska and 50 Hikes Around Anchorage for Mountaineers Books. Lisa recommends 10 wintertime hiking trails not far from the city at hikingalaska.net. And I just want to finish with just a little discussion about embracing the darkness, you know, because it does get, you can be looking at the stars at 6 p.m., right?
Absolutely. And that's a spectacular thing. How many places in the world can you go and say that you have done that?
So it is a chance if you go to vacation in the winter in Anchorage where you can just spend time with a cup of hot chocolate and under the stars long before your bedtime.
Absolutely. And honestly, I kind of look forward to winter for that. Don't get me wrong, I love summer and I do wish that there were a place where you could have a year-round Alaska summer. But I also love the swing of the seasons. Mm-hmm. It's like a chance to cozy up with your favorite fuzzy blanket, to really enjoy the contrast between the cold outside and the warmth and the comfort of being inside. And sometimes it also makes even a little outside jaunt feel like more of an adventure too. Yeah. And especially if you're not used to this kind of climate, then it's a really novel and exciting experience to be outside in a place where you can see your breath, you know, get just a little way out of town and you can see the stars. You might see wild animals in their finery too. Some of them change their coats from brown in the summer to white in the winter. There's just a lot going on here once you start looking for it.
And it's funny you say wild animals in their finery. I also think of nature in its finery when it's just kind of draped with the jewelry of ice and snow. I mean, the whole world it's like a frozen wonderland we have when we go to the theater.
I can't think of a better way to describe it than frozen wonderland. And one of the most beautiful phenomena that I have seen here is called hoarfrost. It's when it gets very, very cold and then layers of really fine ice from the air start building up on any exposed surface, and it can build up into these beautiful feathery concoctions. It's like the world around you has grown these delicate white feathers, or sometimes it builds up in these little sort of sparkling, very delicate spikes. It's beautiful. And you can even see ice pillars in the sky, even if you don't see the northern lights. Sometimes there are enough particles of sparkling ice in the sky that you end up seeing these pillars of luminescent light, whatever light is in the atmosphere or from the town, it just collects. And then it gets sort of channeled by these columns of ice in the sky. It's beautiful.
Nature in all its finery, in its winter finery. Lisa Maloney, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for writing The Moon Guidebook to Alaska. Best wishes.
Thank you, Rick. Happy travels.
Happy travels.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Casimir Hall, and Donna Bardsley. You can find links to our guests and listen to a podcast version of the show or search the archives. It's all at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.